This is The Week in Review, where we talk with two guests from different political perspectives about the top issues in the news. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, October the 21st. We'll cover international, national, and state news, including the death of Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi, the latest on the national jobs debate, and what's being accomplished during the Wisconsin special session on jobs. And you get to weigh in, too, and suggest stories from the news from this week, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or reach us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us our Wausau contingent. Christine Bremer Moogley is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Keen Winters is a financial planner in Schofield and coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks to both you for being with us, and we have a lot of territory to cover here. So let's start with the death of Muammar Gaddafi. Just your general thoughts, Keen Winters.
Well, in general, I think it is an end to a long, difficult chapter for Libya and a chapter for the world. But I think it's almost too soon to understand really what this means. I mean, we're still sorting through the reports. It's clear that the Misrata Military Council ordered its troops into the field to grab Gaddafi and probably grabbed him and killed him on orders while the National Transition Council in Benghazi was out of the loop. And that's not a good sign. It's interesting that the Europeans are saying, yep, our mission is over with. No, they've got a long ways to go. There may not be any more bombing, but they've got a lot of nation building to do in their backyard.
Yeah, and Christine Bremer Moogley, your thoughts?
Yes, I agree with Keen. I think that this is going to be really hard for the Libyans to come back. They have really no institutions in their country, and so Gaddafi held them together without government and just with what he called a pure democracy, so no one could challenge him. So now we've got this situation. You know, I think that's really important about this, though. When we look at what happened here, I think even the Republicans like John McCain, who opposed Obama's plans for Libya, really have come forward and said he did a good job and he deserves credit. I think Romney even said that yesterday, because his plan, you know, was one that he took, you know, not unilateral action, but collective action. He made certain NATO was involved in this, and the neighbors, the Arab neighbors. And, you know, he didn't do a lot of boots on the ground. It was surgical strikes. So as much as we don't like, you know, military action in foreign countries, many of us, this one, I think Obama does deserve some credit for it. It's something that it's surprising he's even getting credit from the right.
We have some callers, Ned and Knowlton, on this topic. Hi, Ned.
Hi. Earlier this year, there were many Republicans that actually were opposed to this intervention by the United States. And I really think that was a time now for them to admit that they were wrong. The problem is that as the Gaddafi loyalists were approaching Benghazi, the question was, are we going to let them get massacred, or is NATO going to step in and do something? And a lot of people on the right were especially saying, oh, we're already in two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we need to stay out of this. Well, this was the right approach. There were no boots on the ground. There were no American deaths. And it cost a total of just about $1 billion. That's the amount we spent in one day in the Iraq war when it was going full strength. So it was well worth the effort. We did not take the lead. It was the British and the French that were doing most of the airstrikes. And the price was right, and the outcome was surprising to a lot of people a few months ago. They didn't think we'd be able to get Gaddafi out of power. And so this is the second time this year we've had a major foreign international program that has come through earlier this year. We got
Ned. Okay, thanks. We got your point. But let me get a response from Keen Winters.
Well, I would say Ned misunderstands the Republican point of view on this all along. When the Gaddafi forces were closing in on Benghazi, it was Republicans who were saying, hurry up, do something, stop dithering President Obama, and wanted an intervention. But later, when the intervention was going, they wanted proper consultation with Congress and proper congressional approval for the commission of troops to a fight. And the Obama administration never did that. And he would have been one of George Bush's fiercest critics on issues like that. And yet he exerted the most unilateral presidential commitment of forces. And while we can be happy with the outcome, we can be unhappy with that precedent.
I have to respond to that, Joy. That's absolutely false, Keene. It was not a unilateral commitment of forces. It was a multinational commitment of forces utilizing the UN. And I think that when the Republicans were criticizing him, you know, they were criticizing him and trying to get him to do exactly what they've wanted to do all along with him, you know, trying to get him to follow their lead. You know, we've seen what's happened when our Congress has led. And in this case, we can see that if President Obama had a multilateral, affordable, and effective approach, and he should be credited for it. And I think that in this one case, Keene, I think you could say, good job, President.
Yeah, there is some talk that this the president's remarks yesterday regarding this intervention in Libya and the death of Gaddafi, that this was hinting at an Obama doctrine, that should there be any military intervention in the future, that it would be done in collaboration with other countries. Is this the Obama doctrine, Christine?
Well, it seems to be the Obama doctrine, and it really takes us back to the doctrine that the first President Bush had when he was successful in the war in Iraq. We all remember that he made certain that he had a coalition of nations to go together with him, and we had success there. The problems that we've had in the most recent years with Afghanistan has really been that it's been the United States leading, and the cost have been, in most people's estimations, way too much for our country, especially now. So if the Obama doctrine is multinational and he can make certain that we don't have boots on the ground and we spend as little as we did in this case for really good reasons, then I think that people will support it. It's when we have to send our youth and spend our treasure when we have so little of it left that people are not going to support that.
Anything more, Keene?
No, I would say, in fairness to Christine, I think we're all pleased with the outcome on this. My you know, sort of a small point, but we have to follow constitutional processes. It can't be the president committing troops alone without backing from Congress.
In other international news, there was a prisoner exchange earlier this week, one Israeli soldier for a lot of Palestinian soldiers or fighters. This drew some controversy on both sides, but just wondering if you have very quick thoughts on whether this is a step toward more negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. Keene, your thoughts on the significance of that exchange?
Well, it's one of those things where it's really hard to get your arms around all the implications. I think it was 1,027 Palestinian prisoners for one Israeli soldier who had been kidnapped by a cross-border raid. And we don't know, and the credit goes to Hamas, not really the functioning Palestinian government. So does that make Palestinian government more divided? Maybe. It seems like such a lopsided trade and a cave to terrorism. It's hard to see where this goes. Mm-hmm. That's in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
Well, you know, I agree with you, Keene. I think this is hard to understand for us, but I think if you live in Israel and understand that for the past many years, this man, Sergeant Shalit, has been on the lips of most Israelis. They have all been involved in working to get his release, and I think the Israeli culture is very, very strong that every single soldier must come home, and I think the people in Israel were very united about this, so it was really a political move and a humanitarian move that they tried to bring off. It's hard for us to understand the balance But I think from a political side of things, bringing this man home was a very good move for Netanyahu, for his people. And I think it might also be showing that he's weakening and you know, wants to maybe give a hand to Hamas. We'll see.
This is the Week in Review. We are talking with Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, and Keene Winters, who is a financial planner in Schofield and coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. We will talk about other big stories in the news this week as we go along. We'll move next to the national politics and what's going on the national scene in terms of the race for president on the GOP campaign trail, and the debate over the jobs bills as well heating up. 1-800-642-1234 if you would like to join in with your thoughts on those stories, or if you have another topic you would like to bring up. Can't stress that enough. You're invited to introduce a topic from the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along during this edition of the Week in Review. Later today, you can join John Munson in for Ben Marins for your views on the news. Join John and his guest after 4 this afternoon to talk about what you think is the week's most significant news story. Your views on the news after 4 this afternoon. This is our Week in Review, where we talk about a wide variety of top political news stories in the news each week, every Friday at this time. Let's talk a little bit about the Republican presidential candidate debate this week. And Keene Winters, what were your impressions? What stood out to you?
I thought it was a good debate. I'm really interested in the ascendancy of Herman Cain. I think he really has enlivened the debate, and that's a very interesting thing to have someone who's really going to come from a non-political circle. I think people like Christine and I, who have been involved in politics for a long time, would have written off a candidate like Herman Cain very early on and said, you know, look, you just don't have the base, you haven't been through, put in your dues. It can happen for you, and it looks like it could happen, and I think that's really the promise of America.
Mm-hmm. Christine, your thoughts?
Well, Keene, I thought the debate was entertaining. I didn't see it as anything close to serious. In these serious times, they have candidates that are, you know, really not serious about the future, in my opinion. Herman Cain, you know, makes jokes about electrocuting undocumented workers and their families. He comes up with a tax plan that will cause the poor in this country to have increases in taxes that would be they absolutely could not handle. And he talks about, you know, things that are crucially important to this country in a joking way, and then comes back and said, "I didn't mean it." It's hard to understand how a man, he's obviously very talented and entertaining, but it's hard to understand a man who has never formed a coalition, never really, you know, dealt with any real serious issues, could be our president. When he talked about what were the challenges in his life, he has an excerpt in his book about a day when the grill went down at Burger King he was managing, and it was really hard for him because he had to go out in line and talk to the people who are waiting for their burgers. Is this the guy we want at 3 a.m. in the morning? I mean, he's untested. So I think it's frightening that the Republicans would put him forward. What are they thinking? We have no serious candidate on the Republican side then. And it's to me, it's absolutely frightening to think that people would get behind a guy like Herman Cain.
Herman Cain is going to have a news conference today, and I don't know if both of you heard about this or not, but he's going to tweak his 999 plan. Some are saying because there's been some criticism over how it would raise taxes on lower income and lower taxes on higher income, and he's going to make some tweaks to it. And I'm wondering, just in general, Christine, what are your thoughts on this 999 plan?
Well, the thing about the 999 plan for people that really don't want to pay attention to politics is they say, boy, that sounds great. That's really easy to understand. In Wisconsin, we already pay a 5.5% sales tax. We're going to pay another 9% on top of it. People don't understand what they're talking about. This does not affect the rich. It affects disproportionately the people that don't have money to save, and all their money goes to sales and consumer items. So it's funny to think that he has this very simple plan, and that's what he stands for, 999, very simple, and he yells it out every chance he gets. And now all of a sudden we're having, well, we have to tweak it. And the tweaking is what we all do with our income tax returns when we have 15 pages of returns. So, you know, it's just false. Now we're going to tweak a 999 plan. What's going to be 9.19, 0.29, 9.000 plus 5? I mean, what is this going to mean? It's just false. It's hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm. Keen?
Well, it is another version of the flat tax kind of idea with a value-added tax, and a lot of respected economists talk about this. But we have to have a serious discussion, and he has now at least launched us on it, about reforming the tax code in this country. And there are conservatives who disagree with him. For example, Grover Norquist thinks the best way to go about it is to, quote, prune the deductions in the current system. That's one school of thought, but I think he's given us an alternative to think about. The current system really is so riddled with loopholes, it really has to change, and I think it's, in a sense, with those loopholes, an unfair system. And we've got to get to something which is simpler. A simpler tax system will grow the economy because people will understand what their tax outcomes are up front.
Do you like
that? I just think Keene's absolutely right about that. And aren't you surprised, Keene?
You agree.
I agree with you.
I think the plan, the Herman Cain plan, probably needs tweaking. And by gosh, he's going to do it, and we'll see what he says.
The tweaking is the funny part about it. The whole thing about Herman Cain that people like is the simplicity of it, and now we say it's going to be tweaked. Everyone agrees that the plan has to be modified. You know, so you can come forward as a serious presidential candidate with a ridiculous proposal and scream it out everywhere you want to go. It's not being serious. It's not being responsible. So I'm glad the Republicans are saying this. You know, this guy has to work on this. We shouldn't be promising anything this crazy to the American people.
Another call from John in Burlington. Hello, John.
I think the whole debate was really disappointing. I think it's disappointing that that's the state of the Republican Party is. They have this big victory they want to win, and I quite honestly, I'm disappointed in your guest who is happy with the way that things went. I think it was an embarrassment. I think it was a borderline Saturday Night Live skit. It's a bunch of guys that are clueless calling each other names. It's not even, you know, what is the format stinks, and it's just, you know, like you said, Cain's plan needs tweaking. Why is he on the stage if his plan doesn't work and everybody's talking about it? I mean, what? Where's the logic in that? I have a plan. It's not going to work, but put me up there too. Honestly.
All right.
I agree with John. You know, I think that one of the biggest moments in the debate I thought was a real window on Romney was when Romney was having this fight with Perry. They couldn't even talk to each other, talking over each other. Romney's face is getting all red, and they're talking about undocumented workers and calling them illegals in this very pejorative way. And then all of a sudden Romney's telling this story about his lawn getting cut by a firm that hires, quote, illegals. And he said, you know, to these guys, he tells the audience, you know, I told the man that was cutting my lawn, what are you doing to me? I'm running for office. I can't have illegals. So it gives you a window into his soul. What is he really thinking? He doesn't want illegals cutting his lawn because he's running for office. But what's the bigger issue here? And is this the guy that we really want running for being our president, a guy that calls undocumented workers who many people in this country think really help our country in certain ways? I mean, we don't like illegal immigration, but to call them illegals, and he doesn't want them cutting his lawn because he's running for president. I mean, it's ridiculous. I agree with John. It was entertaining.
Keenan, do you want to defend the candidates and their talk about immigration?
Sure, I will. Well, not necessarily their talk about immigration. But look, every time there's a party out of power that's putting forward a primary for candidates for president, you know, Bill Clinton emerged from a field. There was a lot of silly debates in that structure, too, and a lot of minor candidates who have gone away and since been forgotten. It happens every time when there's a party out of power. The primary process is a trial by fire, and it's rough and tumble, and it's as ugly as sausage making, but I think it's good democracy.
All right, now another call from...
The problem is, Joy, just the last point, the problem is that the worst actors are the guys that are leading in the polls. That's what's so troubling about this. We can all say Michelle Bachmann is off the, you know, she's off the radar, but on the other hand, we got Romney, you know, putting hands on Rick Perry and Kane coming up with these ridiculous proposals. It's frightening.
Dave in Wanakee is with us. Hello, Dave.
Yes, hello. I thought one of the best questions of the debate came from Ron Paul, and I would like to ask Mr. Winters this question. Ronald Reagan said that he would not negotiate arms for hostages, or not negotiate with terrorists for hostages, yet he sent missiles to Iran in exchange for hostages. Was Ronald Reagan wrong to do that?
Well, apparently Ron Paul asked his colleagues to condemn President Reagan for exchanging arms for hostages in Iran during his tenure, Keene Winters.
Well, I think Ronald Reagan was good at doing what needed to be done, and you know, you throw out these black and white things, and government is much more nuanced than that. Certainly, you have to have a public policy that you don't negotiate with terrorists, because that's the way. If you do, you encourage more terrorism. On the practical side, just like we've talked about with the Israelis earlier, when you have citizens who have been captured, or you have something you need to get done, sometimes you have to go and get it done, and take the ways that are available to you. So I think Reagan did a good job of living in that complicated world, getting done what needed to be done, but also keeping up what has to be your public policy, that you don't negotiate with terrorists.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Keene Winters and Christine Bremer-Moogley, and we are reviewing all the top political news stories in the news this week. Let's move on to President Obama taking a bus tour this week. He toured the nation pushing for his jobs plan. The plan was rejected by the Senate last week, and now he's trying to get the proposals passed a piece at a time, and still lobbying for his plan. Is the president on the right track, Christine, or is this just a campaign tour?
I think the president is doing everything he possibly can to move this Congress, and it's just ridiculous that they won't do anything to help the people of this country. I mean, last night the Senate votes 50-50 on a bill that is going to add police, fire, and allows teachers to be rehired and hired in rural areas and all across this country, and they voted it down. I mean, you know, it's just outrageous. I can understand maybe some of you have seen Vice President Biden's anger at the actions of the Senate yesterday. You know, we're talking about, well, we don't want to increase taxes. The way they would pay for this program, this little bit that Obama wanted to put forward to bring forward, you know, more teachers and more police and fire protection for our nation, was to put a tax on 0.05% surtax on any money you earn over $1 million. So if you earn $1,100,000, the tax would be on the $100. And they say no to that. Now, where is shared sacrifice? In our community, Joy, and many listeners maybe don't know, but where Keene and I live, and up here in the rural communities, they are really being hit by not having teachers and having to lay them off. And it's going to be a big problem in the years to come. You know, I served for 9 years on our school board up here, and I can tell you that, you know, when you cut programs from a third grade or from a kindergarten, those children face that the rest of their lives. They have one chance at third grade, one chance at kindergarten. They don't get a do-over. So by taking this chance away from kids and not giving the opportunity to bring more teachers back into our community, the Senate has really done a huge blow to the people of this country and our children and our youth. So I think Obama is on the right track. He's got to do this. He's doing everything he can, and he's showing the country, you know, no matter what I do, this Congress will not act. And we all know that the president cannot act alone. So God bless him. I hope he keeps it up, put it in front of them, and make them vote. And mm-hmm. Let's see what they stand for.
Keene.
Well, the bill is being simplified of course, and the Republican simplification of it is we're going to create more taxes to spend more money on public employees and placate the unions for the election. And I don't know that the sound bites help. The devil is really in the details of this. So in the last week, I've been explaining to clients some of the details. For example, this bill contains provisions to end in 2013 intangible drilling costs for gas and oil and the depletion allowance. Well, without the R&D write-off and without the essentially accelerated depreciation, makes drilling for oil domestically hard. Why is that in there? And there's, in like any piece of federal legislation, it's chock full of stuff like that that needs to be analyzed. But if the president was serious, I think he would be negotiating with Congress, and he would actually have the ability to get something through a Senate that the Democrats control. I mean, President Obama presented a budget at the beginning of his term that his Senate rejected. And so where is the seriousness? Is this a political document, or are you in Washington negotiating in good faith to get things done? And I don't see that happening.
Christine?
The GOP bill, they came up with their own jobs bill in response, and what it does is, they want to take away environmental protections. They want to take away Wall Street reforms. They want to take away the opportunity to collect taxes for government contractors, so that then take $30 million out of federal programs. So, it's just tit for tat. And so they know that the Democrats stand for environmental protections, will take those out. They know that and Democrats want Wall Street reforms, will take those out. And so no Democrat can vote for some of these bills. You know, when we talk about the democratically controlled Senate, people that know this country know that because of Senate rules, there has to be a supermajority in the Senate. They have to have 60 votes. The Democrats don't have that. And so nothing can go through without it. We are absolutely stymied. President Obama has gone to them and said, look, in the deficit, when we were talking about the debt ceiling debate, he was willing to cut trillions of dollars from the budget and come up with a super deal. And the Republicans rejected it because they just don't want him to do anything successful. They've been campaigning since the very beginning of his presidency. So he's doing what he can. He's out on the road. He's really trying to use the bully pulpit and let people understand what's going on, because I'm afraid people are so despondent they don't even pay attention anymore. So we have to pay attention. Yeah. And we have to look at this right now. We're going to be bringing forward little bits of this jobs bill, and I think, unfortunately, the Republicans will do everything they can to stymie it, and the country will suffer.
Keene, the president on his bus tour did say that the GOP jobs plan is essentially, let's have dirtier air, dirtier water, let's let Wall Street do what it wants, let's repeal health care reform, and that, he says, is the GOP jobs plan?
And he is the Robespierre rhetoric on that. But I don't think sound bites like that help us get anywhere. You got to take a look at the details. One of the environmental regulations everybody here in Wisconsin is grappling with is this whole upstart about fugitive dust. We need to roll some of those kind of changes back, and allow there to be less regulation and people to grow And if you've lived in a rural area, and I did for a while on a gravel road, hey, dust is just part of it. And we ought not be brainstorming new regulations to deal with that. We can deal when jobs should be job one.
Well, this dust regulation, it's easy to make it sound ridiculous like that, Keene, and I know you don't mean to, but for goodness sake, the dust regulations were significant. It was by repealing some of those dust regulations, it's going to cause over 32,000 people in this country to die who have respiratory distress, because they're not going to be allowed to be protected by things that the EPA has studied and has said that this is really crucial to the people of this country. So it's not that simple to just say, we got a little dust on a country road. These are very important things that protect the whole country. So we shouldn't be simplistic about this. The whole point of this is, really, right now, look at our country. Look at what's going on. We need to protect people. The crime rate has gone up because the police forces have gone down. They've looked at what is really crucial, the youth, teaching, fire protection, and police protection, and they can't even agree on that. It's ridiculous.
Let's talk about, this is a very sad situation, but it has to do with regulations. This terrible situation in Ohio where all these exotic animals, wild animals, were being kept and ended up being released by their owner and were shot by authorities. Conservationists are and animal lovers are outraged over a lot of this, and they're demanding stronger U.S. wildlife laws, specifically saying there needs to be wildlife ownership laws in many states in the United States, including Wisconsin, where they say rules are utterly non-existent. Should we say in Wisconsin, should the U.S. say that you cannot own wild animals like these animals on this farm? Keene Winters?
I think we need to do some consideration. But anyone who's looking at Wisconsin and saying that our DNR is toothless doesn't know Wisconsin. Every time I go to a boat landing, I'm reminded that we have laws and regulation against invasive species and dangerous species. And so I think we have the ability to handle that. What I would say, though, about this situation, incredibly tragic, but here you have a farmer who's potentially mentally unstable in the sense that he does end his life with suicide, who has 18 Bengal tigers in his barn. That's such a statistical outlier. Do I worry that hundreds of farmers have 18 Bengal tigers in their barn? No, and I know that if we just pass legislation, it may have an unintended consequences. The Bengal tiger is a rare species. Somebody's got to be breeding them somewhere if we're going to have them around. And so if you just simply take another event like this, which is incredibly tragic and incredibly sad, but use that as the formation, the foundation to formulate broad sweeping policies, you have more unintended consequences than you do good.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
Well, you know, I had a case once in Wisconsin with a guy who kept pet cougars in his yard, and they got loose, and a next-door neighbor had five children, and the three-year-old was dragged off into the woods one of these cougars. You know, so, you know, is this a real issue in Wisconsin? Sure it is. And is it something that, is horrible? And is this something that we should try to regulate? Yeah. So I agree with Keene, this is an outrageous story. I mean, so sad, it's just hard to even put your arms around. It's so pathetically horrible. But we all hear about the stories about people having boa constrictors and they get loose, and they're in the Everglades now, and they're, you know, in the southern states, it's much worse for here because the exotic animals can't live in our climate. But, you know, in the southern states, when they get these giant snakes and monkeys attacking people, I mean, we do need to regulate this. These kind of creatures should be protected, and the people in the surrounding that live near people that like them should also be protected. So I believe in government regulation in this sense, and I think it should be something we enact as soon as possible.
There was one more quick hit on a national story. The Senate passed a bill this week that would ban operations like the Fast and Furious gun operation aimed at preventing guns in federal anti-drug operations from falling into criminal hands. A good idea, Keene Winter, to ban this?
Yes, it's a good idea. And I don't think we need to. It was a mistake by the Obama administration. Someone's got to be held accountable for it. Simply selling guns to criminals as a means of some sort of strategic tracking and then losing track of them. I mean, a hugely botched operation, but also really a bad idea at its core. So we can have probably not do that anymore. That would be a great idea. And so whether we needed to actually pass legislation to do that or not, I don't know that we did.
Christine?
Well, it's interesting that this passed 99-0. It's one thing that the Senate can actually agree upon, and I agree with Keene. It's a botched effort. I know that they were trying to put some blame on our Attorney General, who obviously didn't have knowledge this was going on in this fashion. It's sad that it happened, you know. I think they're trying to do everything to put down the Mexican drug cartels that we all agree are extremely dangerous. But it just didn't work. It's a bad idea to do this kind of thing.
We are reviewing the news of the week with our two guests, Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, and Keen Winters, financial planner and Schofield coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. I'm Joy Cardine. We will get to some state issues coming up in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review quiz. We've got a pretty straightforward quiz question for you this week. You need to listen carefully to this following soundbite.
Imagine there's no pizza. I couldn't if I tried.
All right, so whose voice was that? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You get 5 minutes or so to guess or answer the Week in Review quiz question. At the end of the hour, we'll announce the answer and the winner. So who was that was singing? That's the quiz question. Let's turn to state issues. Lots of stuff going on in the state legislature. There is a special session on jobs taking place. And just yesterday, the state Senate passed a bill that will link student test scores to teacher discipline. Is that a good idea, Keen Winters?
I think it's a good idea to make that, include that in the mix. Look, you have to have jobs outcomes tied to the outcomes that you want for production, and having test scores included. Now, I know the argument's going to be sometimes I gotta have a difficult class, I'm in a difficult community, things like that. But you know, I as a financial planner, I'm managing money in a difficult environment. That's just part of the world. And we should really accept that.
Christine.
I think this is just another effort to try to make certain that our teachers are demoralized, frankly. I think this is, I understand as a member, as I've said, of a school board, that there can be teachers that don't do their jobs and they should be removed. I agree. If they are no good, they shouldn't be with our kids. They don't deserve to be there. But to tie test scores to their discipline, I don't know how that could possibly work. I think it's a very risky thing to do right now in our state. This is a time when we should be trying to help buoy up our teachers to make certain the schools are a happy place and not try to make the teachers feel like they are just totally being demoralized and put down upon. This is not a good move right now, and I think we could have done something different. If we want to get to the issue of teachers' performance, let's do it differently. But this is really something we don't need right now.
Speaking,
well, I'll weigh in quickly. Mm-hmm. The exact law is that you can use test scores as one factor in determining whether to terminate a teacher. I think it's crazy that up until this point that the law has been that you cannot use classroom outcomes on tests to make a decision on how to hire or fire a teacher. It's crazy that people should expect to have a job where the main outcomes have nothing to do with whether they're hired or fired.
You know,
I could just like to say, Joy, you know, right now the governor has invited the superintendent, Tony Evers, to come in with a comprehensive approach to looking at how we discipline teachers and how teachers are being paid. And to do this piecemeal like this and to pull this out right now in this session is just something that shows the haste and the lack of good legislative judgment of the leaders on the GOP side.
Yeah, we have a lot of bills to cover, a lot of action to cover, so we'll try to hit as many of the items as quickly as possible for the rest of the show. This special session on jobs has drawn a criticism for not being focused exclusively on jobs, according to Democrats. And one of the controversial bills that had a public hearing this week would rewrite the state's sex education laws, and it would allow districts to use abstinence-only education. Right now, the law is to have comprehensive sex education. and not abstinence only. Christine Bremer-Moogley, what do you think of this bill and the general criticism that it doesn't belong in a job session?
Well, it absolutely doesn't belong in a job session. A special session is called for a certain reason, and this is not even on the governor's executive order. So I think it violates the Constitution in putting it even in the special session, number one. But number two, the bill itself is outrageous. I mean, it bans medical professionals from coming into schools to provide reproductive health information. It says that parents are not to be told if a school does not have a program of reproductive health education. And it also says it mandates the curriculum for the curriculum advisory boards for school districts. So, you know, the Republican philosophy, as I understand it, is less government, more local control, except when we don't agree with you, or except when we have a social agenda that we want to put down your throats. And this social agenda of abstinence only, you know, everyone agrees, yeah, kids shouldn't have sex until they're married. And yeah, it's a good idea to teach them parenting skills. These are all great ideas, but let's be real about it. 12% of the kids in Milwaukee are having sex by the time they're 13. And we're going to say we're not going to teach them about condoms, and we're not going to teach them about sexually transmitted diseases, and we're not going to teach them about reproduction. I mean, it's ridiculous. Put your head in the sand and pass this bill. But let's talk about what our kids really need, and let school boards and school districts and communities decide what's best for them, like they did up in Merrill. This is ridiculous, and it's certainly not something that we sent our Senator Pam Galloway to do. This is out of the blue.
All right. Keene, first of all, the topic of the sex education in Wisconsin, and then does this belong in a special session on jobs?
I agree with Christine's final point that we really ought to allow flexibility, and we are opening a law that allows some districts, if they want to pursue abstinence only. And there are people who don't like that course, and we're probably not going to solve the sex ed debate in just a few minutes on the radio, because people seem to assume that contraception, you know, condoms are maybe low 80% effective, birth control, yeah, low 90% effective, and to be introducing that to kids and expect them to make good decisions, we really ought to be pushing abstinence only is really at that age the absolute best solution. And local governments ought to have the freedom to do what they think is right for their community in pursuing that kind of a goal.
What's your response to the criticism by Democrats, Keene, that this legislation and other bills, too, don't belong in a special session on jobs?
Well, I'm glad to see the legislature back and working, would I prefer to see it in a general session? Absolutely. But I'm glad that they're working now at a time when we have issues on jobs, and that they're not just sitting on their hands or out of session.
Yes,
I have to say, I just have to say, Joy, you know, this is a bill from Tamara Grigsby. It helped reduce teen pregnancies. They're going down. When teen pregnancies go down, education and graduation rates go up. When graduation rates go up, it helps the economy. That's the only tie to the economy in this bill. There's nothing in the governor's executive order 45 with regard to this, and it does not belong in a special session. We should have the communities have the opportunity to debate it. They have two public hearings, and they're going to push it through. It's absolutely wrong.
Well, remember, this is a reversal of something that the Democrats pushed through on their social agenda just 2 years ago. So we're going back from one overreach, and we're just cutting it back. And to say that there is, that in that intervening period, that there's data that it worked, that's statistically significant, I think, is quite a stretch.
We have a social agenda point. Yeah, this is, I mean, we could go all hour on this topic,
yeah.
But unfortunately we have only six minutes to go and lots more topics. So I'm going to ask you, even though it's hard to try to just limit to one comment on each story, since we need to fill a lot of time here. Governor Walker said that changes to Wisconsin tort laws will be good for business this week. He received an award for tort reform by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He is talking about tort reforms related to prescription drugs, attorney fees, and interest rates on damage awards that are in the special session on jobs. Christine, we can't go into every single one of these in great detail, but what do you say to Governor Walker saying that these changes will be good for business?
Well, they certainly are not good for the people of Wisconsin, and they certainly have nothing to do with jobs. These changes were added, these portions of you know, these special session bills were added at the end of the list, and they are simply keyed toward payback to business. You know, the legal immunity for drug makers, the Coalition for Aging said this was absolutely outrageous, has nothing to do with jobs, it's just going to harm people and put costs on the taxpayers from those who are harmed by drugs that fail. And we have to pay for that care if the manufacturer who is responsible for failed products is not. You know, with regard to the other two bills, one of the bills takes away the right of consumers' attorneys to be paid by parties who violate consumer rights. This goes back on 40 years of law that protected consumers in this state, and so that a consumer would have an opportunity to get counsel to help them when they're victimized by a business that violates their rights. Now only the businesses will have the opportunity to have counsel, and the consumer will not. So this takes away from the consumer the right to bring an action for a lemon law, for instance, or someone who might have an employment discrimination claim. These things are going to be gone because they've decided, the Republicans have decided to take away the right to counsel. And then the final thing is just the most outrageous one, and that's with regard to taking the interest rate for consumers who have won a judgment against someone who committed a tort or a negligent act against them. They've gone to trial, they've won a trial, a jury has awarded a verdict, and the interest rate for them will be 1% over prime. But if a business goes to court and wins the same judgment, the same kind of an action, even a tort action, a business tort, they get 12%. So we have something in our country called the Constitution, and it protects people from unequal protection of the laws, and this is an absolute violation of that.
No.
So, you know, these bills are wrong. They're wrong-minded. They should not pass. Passing them in a special session without the opportunity for public hearing to go across the state is outrageous.
Keene, tort reform is bad for consumers?
I don't think it is. I think tort reform is something that President Obama called for in his State of the Union message. And I think the Walker approach, which has been to take a look at the laws in Wisconsin, which in the 2005-2006 period had really gone far to the left, and look at what other states are doing, benchmark at that, and bring us back to the middle. We're not just making this stuff up out of whole cloth. We're looking at the laboratories of democracy, the other states, in bringing up Wisconsin back into the mainstream. And I think the mainstream is where we want to be for jobs and for consumers.
We
Wisconsin is number 10 in the country.
We're almost out of time. Really quick on this, since Dave Obey is somebody you both know. Dave Obey said that he might consider running for governor should there be a recall election against Governor Scott Walker. He would prefer Herb Kohl or Tom Barrett to be the candidates, but he'll think about it. Christine, what are your thoughts on that? You used to work with Dave Obey.
Well, he's been my congressman, and God bless Dave Obey for still having the spirit and the spunk and the fight to say when something is really wrong in the state, he's not going to put up with it, and he's going to do everything he can to try to fight it. So, you know, if Dave is still in there wanting to battle, we welcome him.
Mm-hmm. Keene?
I think we would welcome the fight. It would be a good contrast between ideologies, and I think we would win.
All right. I'm going to I think that both Keene and Christine recognize this.
Imagine there's no pizza.
All right. That is Herman Cain. We can thank the Omaha World Leader for digging up this audio. Cain, the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza, now a Republican presidential candidate, sang that tune at the 1991 Omaha Press Club meeting. So we had lots of right answers. The winner is Matthew in Madison. Congratulations, Matthew. We will be offering you a choice of books that we featured on the program this week. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Week in Review. I want to thank Keene Winters and Christine Bremer-Moogley for being with us. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thanks, Joy. Thanks, Keene.
And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We'll talk about other state issues in our State Capitol report on Monday. Lots of other issues that we didn't get to during this edition of the Week in Review, but we'll have Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, get us up to date on all the big top state issues on the State Capitol report on Monday between 7 and 7:30. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.